I'm Danica Juarez.
And I'm Jan James.
And this is
How's It Hold Up?
Hi, I'm Danica.
And I'm Jan.
And I'm Valerie.
And today we watched two different shorts from two different studios. One, The Quail Hunt from 1935 at the Walter Lantz Studio. And the other, Gold Diggers of 49 from the Warner Brothers Studio, also from 1935. And the thing that they have in common is that both of these are probably directed by Tex Avery. I say probably because he is technically not credited on The Quail Hunt. There is no credited director outside of Walter Lantz, which was common for the studio at the time. But me having seen a lot of Tex Avery shorts, there's a lot of hallmarks of his work in there. I feel confident saying, yes, Tex Avery worked on this. We know that he worked at the studio during this time. So these are two shorts directed by Tex Avery. Who would like to give a brief plot synopsis of them?
In The Quail Hunt, Oswald and his dog, I don't know his name, if he has one.
Elmer.
Oswald.
The Great Dane.
Yes. Oswald and Elmer go on a quail hunt pretty unsuccessfully. Elmer ends up befriending a quail and saving it from a hawk or something, and has to stop Oswald from trying to shoot the quail, and then they all become friends. In Gold Diggers of 49, Beans, Kitty, and Porky make a return.
Little Kitty.
Beans is prospecting, and Little Kitty is excited for him because they are in love or whatever, and she's the daughter of Porky. So Beans says he finds gold. Lots of people go out to get gold. He brings Porky to help dig. A bag from their dig site gets stolen by a robber of some kind, and Beans retrieves the bag, wins, earns, is given Little Kitty's hand or Little Kitty herself. I don't know, whatever. So they can be together. And he's like, Beans is like, here's your gold to Porky. Porky's like, no, that's my lunch. And that's
the end of the short.
Yeah.
What did we think of these? Not yet. He's not saying that yet.
Whoopee!
He will eventually. We'll be charting the rise of Porky Pig. But at this point, they still think Beans is their big star. What did we think of these two cartoons?
I'll save more comments for later, but Quail Hunt, not great. Looked fine. Not engaging at all. Gold Diggers, there was some cute stuff. Pace was much better. Big yikes moments, but more enjoyable than the first.
I would agree. I mean, because there wasn't anything real objectionable in Quail Hunt, which I liked better, but the visuals and the action I liked much more in the one with Beans and Kitty and all.
Yeah, the Quail Hunt is, I will say, very lethargic and asinine. whereas Gold Diggers of 49 is something that I believe historians credit as basically being a turning point for Looney Tunes and Warner Brothers animation. This is kind of the start of them becoming what they're known for, rather than the basically subpar imitations of Disney products that they were before.
Let's get specific. So let's talk about the story and characters for The Quail Hunt. Notably, the story was written by Walter Lantz and Vic McLeod. And of course, our director was Tex Avery.
The quails were cute. The dog was so unattractive. I liked his personality, and I like what he did. I mean, overall, but he just was not an attractive dog.
Your dog's ugly. Elmer, you know, kind of reminded me of Scooby-Doo, like Great Danes.
Yeah, Great Dane. Yeah.
The big collar, the lanky body.
Yeah.
Yeah, what you said, it's lethargic. The jokes repeat or they take a really long time. It's unnecessary. It wasn't really interesting.
Oswald's barely a character and also barely in it. Elmer is just a Pluto ripoff. He's fine enough for what he is, but he's just a dog.
Yeah.
I think, I guess to me, the thing that's most interesting on a character level for Quail Hunt is the quails.
Exactly.
Who occasionally are sometimes embodying some of the aspects that would kind of come to define the screwball characters that Tex Avery really kind of pioneered and was also maybe too big a fan of in his later career. You're starting to see the signs of early Daffy Duck and those sorts of characters that like are silly and are like having kind of a gleeful time messing with the protagonist or whatever, you know. You'll have scenes where the quails are like doing things or pretending to be hurt or whatever, and then they'll like smile like big at the audience and stuff.
Yes.
And then do something violent, you know, which doesn't happen a lot. There's mainly one part where he like cracks them over the head with a crutch. Mm-hmm. But you're starting to see some of those things that Tex Avery really loves coming out here.
Yeah, I would agree. And the with Quail Hunt, the quails, like you said, were the most interesting, were the cutest characters. And then the one that you were talking about, like they're the mother bird or the mother quail. I like where she zipped up the nest.
Yeah.
But then again, yeah, walking with the crutches and then I guess leading it away from the nest and cracking with the crutches. Okay. That was kind of a letdown and a long, like you all were saying, drawn out, like a long payoff before she, you know, she did that. Because the most interesting thing about that whole scenario was cute how the whole nest was zipped up and supposedly the dog couldn't smell through it. And yeah, and the only thing that Oswald.
You'll be forgiven because they're both boring characters.
Yes. Yeah. All Oswald did is just fire the gun. There was just so much repetition and everything. It just, again, just got so boring. There was just almost nothing new. They just ran in circles. He shot the gun. He shot into a hole. He kept trying to shoot the quails and missing them like from inches away. So how that happened, I don't know. But
it's also very sad reflecting on who Oswald used to be in our silent era shorts before Mickey. Because recall, he existed before Mickey and was supposed to be the Disney star until rights issues took him away. And back in the day, so he had some clear personality traits of being a little bit of a stinker, being willing to start fights, but then like kind of getting nervous and trying to back out of them. He had these different kind of little things, some of which carried over into early Mickey also. But at this point, he's like just kind of a nothing burger of a character.
Yeah.
He's
chunky round Mickey rabbit.
Yeah. He's mostly supplanted in the cartoon by his own dog, which is unfortunately a foreshadowing for Mickey also.
Yeah.
What about Gold Digger's of 49? What do we think about its story and characters? The story was by Cal Howard and again, Tex Avery is the director.
So I loved Kitty and I loved her little voice. Little Kitty. And how you could understand what she was saying. Oh, he's going to get golden. Then we're going to get married and blah, blah, blah. And
Bernice Hansen is who voices her and she's wonderful. The baby voice that she does and the speed with which she's able to do it, but also like a clear, you can hear what she's saying.
Yeah.
It's really good.
That's what just tickled me so much because when she was going so fast that I'm like thinking, there's no way I can understand her. And then I'm like, oh no, wait, I am understanding
and
her.
And also you having that be the first thing you say about this cartoon alludes to one of the big differences between these two cartoons is that there's no dialogue in the Quail Hunt.
That's
none
right.
of the characters talk.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas the Gold Diggers of 49, there's a bunch of talking. You know, that's a Looney Tunes staple is the witty comedic dialogue and stuff and the comedic voice acting. And we get to see that here.
There was comedic voices, but not really comedic dialogue.
Yeah, they're definitely still working on that one. it's not as witty as it will eventually be, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're trying to give Porky a catchphrase, saying whoopee a lot. It's like, don't.
I know, it's like, no.
And Porky is notably voiced by the exact same person who voiced him the first time we saw him, where he was a kid and had a much higher pitched voice.
Uh-huh.
He's still Joe Dirty Daughtry, but this time they didn't speed up his voice.
Yeah.
Which is a rarity, because he will continue to have a sped up voice for most of the, almost all of his appearances after this that are Joe Dirty.
Story-wise, I don't know why Beans went through the whole town telling people there was gold.
I know!
It's like, you keep that to yourself.
I have a guess, which is that the short's title alludes to the California Gold Rush, obviously, but also to the popular Bubsy Berkeley musicals Gold Diggers of 1933 and Gold Diggers of 1935, which were also released by Warner Brothers. And I wonder if that sort of scene of someone going through the town yelling is in either one of those, you know, to where that'd be a spoof of it.
And obviously it allows for more jokes with individuals. And with individuals, I mean like the different groups going for the gold. Like the guy in the tub, kicking his feet from through the tub and walking, trying to get gold.
Like barbershop quartet.
Yes.
I thought that was racist caricatures.
No, that was not great. But I think maybe for more intrigue, if he like was going quickly, told Porky and Little Kitty about it, somebody overheard them, and then they went through the town. You could do the same jokes, but it wouldn't feel as like, oh, that's something that you should keep to yourself.
Yeah, I can imagine like them talking in there, then someone's at the window and goes, gold, really loudly because they heard that bit, and then the whole town hears it.
Right,
and
or like,
I would have liked that better.
Or like an ear that's stretched hear them. Like, there's lots of things you could have
definitely
done. And I don't think it would have messed up the pacing too much, because it would kind of flip those two beats, but I think it would have been okay.
It's also notable that this is not only the second time that we have seen Porky in a Warner Brothers cartoon, but also the second time he was in one at all. He didn't get used between now and last time. Mm-hmm. Beans did. But also, I think what's notable here is that Beans, Little Kitty, and Porky are all not child characters anymore.
He sounds young, though.
He sounds young, but given he has a romance interest and everything, it seems like he's not a grade schooler, you know? Yeah. And I have a note here saying that looking for suitable characters for the Warner Brothers stable to embellish, Avery took two child characters from the previous short, I Haven't Got a Hat, well, three, turned them into adults, and as Steve Schlesinger writes, set the studio on track to making adult cartoons. Like, yeah, I think it's notable that a lot of cartoons before this have either explicitly child characters or characters that are much more ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas here, it's fairly unambiguous that Beans and Little Kitty are, at the very least, not grade schoolers. And Porky is literally a father.
Yes.
So there's a definite, like, they're older. This is a story about adults that adults can more easily potentially enjoy, rather than having to be, like, a nostalgia trip almost thing.
Yes.
I liked how where Beans found the gold, it was like a slot machine,
mm-hmm.
in this part of the mountain, and then he pulled down a branch of a tree like you would a slot machine handle, and then what came out were gold coins, and that all the gold they were finding were just like these perfect gold coins. Kind of funny.
Yeah.
I like those gags.
Also, I don't know if you guys noticed, because he doesn't have very many lines, but the bandit is voiced by Billy Bletcher, who is, you know, Pete all the time and stuff. Yeah, because we're kind of already wanting to talk about it, we can keep talking about story and characters, but let's also talk about it through the frame of animation. The Quail Hunt's animators were Fred Kopietz, Bill Mason, Ed Benedict, and Ray Abrams, whereas Gold Diggers of 49 was edited by Treg Brown and animated by Bob Clampett, Chuck Jones, Robert Cannon, Virgil Ross, Sid Sutherland, Cecil Suri, and Elmer Waite. And those first two in particular are pretty notable. I think all know Chuck Jones. That's a pretty well-known name. And Bob Clampett is also going to be a rising star here at the studio that would have a very eclectic style as it goes on that would be influential to people decades down the line. Ren and Stimpy's stuff is influenced by that. The current on Max, the Looney Tunes cartoons is what it's called, that are kind of trying to be in stylistically in terms of their content, like the old Looney Tunes cartoons, are very much stylistically in kind of a Bob Clampett direction rather than a Chuck Jones direction. It'll be interesting to see as they, but we'll be hearing their names more, is I guess what I'm saying. Bob Clampett and Chuck Jones, big deals. And I think a lot of these other animators are going to continue to be animating on a lot of these. I think the number of animators alone is clearly different. Mm-hmm. And also that there is an editor credited. That editor did a better job than any sort of person doing that job on the first, on Quail Hunt.
Yeah, so like on Quail Hunt, one of the big ones to me was there was a scene where a quail landed on Elmer's nose and Oswald leveled the gun at the quail, at the dog, but then Elmer like moved his head up and down. And the pace of that was so slow. And Oswald's reaction was slow as well. It just dragged on too long. It could have done the same amount of iterations of that at like a quarter of the time. It was definitely so slow.
I think that's the biggest issue for me of the Quail Hunt is that there's some jokes in there, like some visual gags and stuff that would be good, but are killed by their pacing. There's just way too much lethargy in the movements. A lot of the movements are very fluid. Like, there's a lot of fluid animation going on here, obscured a little bit by the quality that we have, because it's not exactly Blu-ray quality. But, like, there's a smoothness to the animation. But it comes, like, it's sacrificing speed in doing that, it feels like. And the speed would have made it a better cartoon. It's just too slow. Stuff gets dragged out too long. Loops go on too long. It's just... The pace is deadening to the cartoon's quality.
Oh, yeah. And another one where Oswald shoots the gun and the kickback, you know, has him walking back. And he's walking back so...
He's not walking. He's being flung back. But it's so long.
Yes. Well, he's moving his feet because it's the force of it is making him step back. But again, he's stepping back like
interminably long.
A leisurely pace. And it happens like 3 times. It's ridiculous.
And it's really, what hurts about it is that that's so slow and unfunny. But then there's a shot not long after it where he takes a shot at the quail and it launches him back into the tree so quickly that it actually did like spark amusement within me. And I'm like, this is what you guys need to be doing for this whole cartoon.
Yeah.
The speed is an essential component to physical comedy working. And I also think a thing that we can directly compare is that I believe the first time that we really saw it in animation was earlier in 1935, the Tortoise and the Hare cartoon from Disney that had these kind of speed lines and stuff of Max Hare going really, really quickly, you know, and stuff would become blurred. But we have that in each of these cartoons also. You have it very briefly in the Quail Hunt with Elmer, like, chugging his legs really fast.
Yeah.
But it goes by so quickly that it doesn't really add up to any interesting joke. But then you have it in Gold Diggers of 49 as, like, a big part of the climax where he, like, puts alcohol in his car because it's out of gas. And then it, like, starts going so fast that it doesn't look like the old jalopy that it is and looks more like a race car or something. And it's just, like, hurtling forward along canyon walls, picking up people. Like, it's this great sense of speed that, like, also adds to, like, all stuff's happening in the cartoon.
I love that. It was, like, more abstract. Like, you couldn't see the details of the car. It was, like...
And when people and things got picked up and pulled into the car, they'd become, like, this abstract lines and disappear into it.
Yeah, like, little kitty, it drove by her, and she started spinning, and she turned... Like, details were gone. You just saw her shape and those lines. It was really good. I liked that part a lot.
Definitely. Like, the sense of speed there is fantastic.
This is backing a little bit, but Elmer is such a terrible name for a dog. Sorry. It's just like, ugh.
It's a better name for a man.
Yes, yes.
A man with the last name.
Yes.
A Fudd. That he's a whole thing also. It'll be fascinating when we start getting to Elmer, because that's not how he starts. It's a whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Random thing. In Porky and Little Kitty's house, there's just a picture of a random dude.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if that's, you know, an homage to someone.
Probably.
In both shorts, they did something goes through the hole and comes out another hole.
Which we saw in the Disney short with Mickey, Donald, and Goofy.
Yes.
Where they're trying to fix Pete's car.
Yes, Goofy's like, it was me. But the one in 49ers was better. He was picking the coin out of his own pocket and putting it back.
Quail Hunt is, like, feeding into the same issues the whole thing has, where Oswald goes into a hole and then loops out, and then it loops too many times.
Yeah, he, like,
with no suitable payoff.
And then,
I'd say the payoff was relatively weak for Porky's also, but the joke itself was much better. I think he did it, like, two times, and it just didn't have, like, a good payoff for sitting with it as long as we did, but it was inherently on a base level a funnier joke than what was done with Oswald.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One joke I really liked was Beans was shooting the bandit and it was hitting his butt, and it was like making a window in his pants, but he wasn't reacting to it, and then the flap in the pants dropped to show that his pant, there was a pan in his butt, so it was just hit, like, the bullets were popping off of the pan after that. That was really funny.
Yeah, that was a good one.
It was almost like a washboard pant. No,
something like that.
It was big.
Big enough to cover his big butt.
And then another similar joke between the two. You had Oswald in the first one, like I mentioned, shooting the gun, and the kickback was strong. It was forcing him back very slowly. In this one, the precursor to the climax was Beans shooting the gun in the car and it pushing the car back and having to rev back up. And he did that twice. And then the payoff was that it was slowing down because it was out of gas, which led to him putting the alcohol in it and, you know, zipping through the town and all of that.
Yeah, and like, so it became a purposeful slowing of the momentum of the cartoon and the animation that then served a story purpose rather than simply being a bad cartoon decision.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And with the car, I did really like that. It felt like it was going so fast. I expected the joke to be like time travel or it being a rocket or something.
I think that's a little too early to go that far, but I could see them doing that later.
Right, but I think that's...
It speaks well to...
Yes, the visuals of it were indicative to me of something, like you said, a bit later than what it was, but, you know, the pieces are there, and it looked... I don't know how to explain how well they kind of abstracted the character as it was going fast, so it felt like it was a different not art medium, but like, you know, you have the realistic art versus the abstract art in a way, but you can it retained the markers of the character, so you could read it all very well. I don't know, it was really cool.
What do you guys think about the music in these shorts? In The Quail Hunt, we have James Dietrich doing the music. And in Gold Diggers of 49, we have Bernard Brown and Norman Spencer.
So for Quail Hunt, I can't assign something causing the other. But the music was just as lethargic as the short. And I don't, like I said, I don't know if the music caused the short to be lethargic or the other way around.
I would assume the other way, in terms of it feels like usually the music is one of the last things done for these shorts.
But yeah, it was slow music, it like hitting the beats of the comedy, the quote-unquote comedy, or the beats of the short. Not engaging at all.
Yes, very lethargic music in the first one.
And with the second one, I don't recall it being bad, but...
I think it was upbeat. I think it did... It went big when it needed to for the purposes of the thing. It's not, you know, we're not hitting kind of the classic era of Looney Tunes music where it's all gold. But I think it had a lot more energy to it and could go up and down in terms of how much energy it had to suit what the joke and the energy of the scene was.
I would agree. And I especially like the music they used in the chase scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious if and how the music changed whenever the car went super fast. I don't recall.
I think it definitely, like, sped up and got louder. Let's go on to the part that our podcast is named after. How's it hold up? I don't think I have a lot to say about the quail hunt in this regard, other than what we've already said, which is that it doesn't hold up and that it's poorly paced and boring. But we also have Gold Diggers of 49, and we have our first look at another unfortunate thing that Tex Avery brought a lot of innovation and speed and humor to his style of cartoons, but he also, unfortunately, look, all of the Looney Tunes directors have racist cartoons in their oeuvre. Unfortunately, no one, even Chuck Jones, was spared of that. They all made some really bad decisions. Tex Avery does it a lot. He really thinks race humor is funny. In this one, we have two racist caricatures of Chinese people who work at a laundromat, who then go after the gold. They're fortunately not in a whole lot of the cartoon, but you see them once when everyone's going, and they're saying some verbal stuff that's like stereotypical nonsense supposed to sound like Chinese speak. And then there's a scene that I'm going to go into more detail in. And then after that, there's a brief thing of them like digging for gold. But the main scene that's the most egregious and drawn out is as Porky and Bean speed off to go for the gold. These caricatures are also running in a cart that one's carrying it, the other's sitting in it. And as Bean and Porky's car passes, it blows a bunch of smoke, which falls onto these Asian caricatures and transforms them into blackface caricatures, who then have some dialogue that is supposed to be funny. I don't even remember what they say. One has kind of a deep, low voice. I think the words he was saying sounded like they were trying to be loquacious, trying to be a verbally intelligent kind of thing, which I think was a common sort of blackface caricature to do, is like a black person who acts like they can speak, like they know big words, but then will use nonsense words or not use words correctly because they are actually stupid. And then the other person who was driving the carriage had like kind of the more whiny, nasally kind of blackface character voice, which is also its own stereotype.
Yeah.
They've all got all these blackface characters like have like names and stuff and history attached to them. They were whole like types of characters that would be in plays and stuff. But anyways, they transform into that, and that's the most egregious and obnoxious scene in the short by far, is turning one caricature into another and sitting on them for a good while. It is a terrible scene that is also easily cut from the short, but nope, we needed to have this in here because Tex Avery and perhaps Cal Howard, who's the story writer, and they all thought that it was funny and good to keep in there. It was 1935, still doesn't excuse it. It was nasty then, it's nasty now.
So you have the first scene where they start to leave, the second scene that's really egregious, and then the third one is when the robber guy is looking through binoculars at what is happening. I don't remember the order, but it's like Beans and Porky digging and those two, the Chinese caricatures, those characters digging. So like, it didn't have to be them. I think it feels like to me the point is that those caricatures are funny, so let's put them in here so there's still a little bit of humor to the scene. But yeah, it didn't have to be them. It could have been any of the other characters.
The quartet that were singing.
Yeah.
Could have a funny joke because one of them was really small, so there could have been a funny joke with how they were digging, made something funny happen with the little guy. I don't know.
Like, yeah, or they're singing while they're digging, like
any number of things.
Yes. So
there wasn't even a joke with the caricatures in that last scene. They're just there digging.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think
yeah,
their character is the joke.
Exactly.
So it's like, let's put these guys back in here so that, you know, it's not,
you can laugh, chuckle a little at their existence.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go on to our favorites and least favorites. What was your least favorite scene in either or both cartoons? However you want to do it.
I'm definitely going to say the racist scenes or where you have the racist caricatures.
Particularly the one where one transforms into another.
Yes.
Awful.
Yes.
Heinous.
Yes. Yeah. With the, yeah, the car, the smoke. The
and I'd say my least favorite scene in the Oswald one was where he shoots the gun and then it's like flying backwards for like 5 years. It almost feels like it's trying to be a precursor to the sort of humor that gives us that Family Guy joke where his knee is hurt and he's going, for like 5 minutes, but it's not even on that humor level. Mm-mm. And that isn't even that funny.
For the first one, there's lots of to choose from with the basis of all of them being like, went too long.
Yeah, was too slow.
I guess I'll choose the one where he, that I mentioned with the bird on Elmer's nose and Oswald like tracking it and just this glacial pace.
For me, in the first one, I'm going to say my least favorite scene was Oswald just going through the hole in circles again and again and again and again and really nothing new there.
What was your favorite scene in each short?
For Quail Hunt, I did like when the bird, after the bird zipped up the nest and pulled up the crutches, I'm like, okay, I got it. And she like hobbles away, even though it was a little too long. And then bops Elmer when she felt that she was safe enough to be like, okay, stop following me.
Yeah. That whack over the head with the crutch is like one of the only remotely visceral, like, physical actions in the short.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And the scene that really tickled me was Beans shooting the guy's butt and him not reacting and the joke revealing that he has a wash pan on his butt, so it doesn't matter.
Yes, I'm going to agree with the quail hunt. I loved the mother bird zipping up her babies in the nest and then, yeah, leading away on the little crutches. I loved that. And in the second one, I think, sorry, I'm just going to have to go with, I love the scene you said where it's revealed that he has the washboard in his hiney. But my favorite is just coming out the bat with little Kitty, just into her little thing. Is like, oh, he's going to go dig for gold and then we're going to get married and blah, 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 blah. And her going, I just love that so much. That set the great tone.
Yes, to make it clear, I agree with, I specifically in Quail Hunt, Elmer getting hit with the crutch was a good moment of physical comedy. And then Gold Diggers of 49, it's actually also the same as Mom's, Bernice Hansen's delivery of just, it's so fun. She's so funny to me. She does such a good job. And I think especially when she's like opened up the newspaper and is showing Porky and is just going on and on about, and I love him and I pay people and I pay him. And it's, yes, it's great. Love it.
Yes. And even the little
she just can give like a nonstop stream of dialogue. It's so good.
And even the little pacer, little legs. She's walking over there. It's just so adorable.
Who was your least favorite character? In Oswald's cartoon, it's Oswald because he's barely a factor in it. And when he is a factor, he's like being way too lethargic in everything he does.
Yeah, he gets dropped about halfway through.
Not even halfway, I'd say.
And maybe then comes up at the end.
Yeah.
I agree.
And then, and the second one, it's easily the racist caricatures. Just have them out of there, please.
I agree.
Yeah, no.
I concur.
If we're going like that small of the characters, yes, those guys, no.
If they hadn't had that one really notable scene, I would almost say that they're too small to count, but like they have a like, big screen presence in one major scene.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's like, yeah, them. Remove them, please.
No, yeah, good point.
Who was your favorite character in each short?
That's hard for me. For Quail Hunt, the mom bird is there for a scene, and that's pretty cute. Otherwise, from the kind of three main, which it's hard to say with the little quail, because there's a bunch of little quails without any discernible differences. But I guess I'll go with the mom quail.
I agree, actually. I was thinking of either the quails, but I kind of like the mom quail.
I think I'll give it to Elmer. He's a Pluto ripoff, but I like that he makes a friend with the quail and then, like, eats the gun or whatever. And is licking them both like, we're friends now. Yeah, it's a cute end to the cartoon, even if it's still paced badly.
Yeah.
That was funny that he did eat the gun.
He did fully eat the gun.
Yes.
And then
little Kitty for me on the last one. I just love her voice so much. I just love her. Sorry.
Yeah, her voice was cute.
I'm wondering if I should give it to Beans. He was in a lot of the short.
True.
But no, I'll go Little Kitty.
Also Little Kitty. She needed to be in more of the short.
Yeah.
Let Bernice Hansen talk more is my general. And I think she's in a lot of the next 5 or so years of Warner Brothers cartoons, especially. So looking forward to more of her. Let's go on to our overall consensus and what we would rate it. I definitely don't recommend Quail Hunt. I recommend from a historical perspective, Gold Diggers of 49. If you're really casual about it, though, there's even pretty soon a lot better Warner Brothers cartoons coming up. So you can skip it, but I recommend it for historical value, definitely.
Yeah, I agree about the recommendations. Quail Hunt, I don't think it does anything new or better than anything we've seen before. For Gold Diggers of 49, there was some interesting things. I really liked the car zipping around, what that looked like. It's interesting from a historical perspective as what seems to be like the turning point. As for ratings, because it is so boring, so slow, so lethargic, I'll give Quail Hunt a 0.75. Like, it looks good, but like I don't need to see that again at all. For Gold Diggers, I'll give it 2.75.
Be higher without the horrible racism.
God, that was, yeah. It was you saw the first scene and you're like, no. And then the second scene and you're like, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
I am very similar. I believe for Quail Hunt, I'm not going to recommend, and I'm going to say also a 0.75. And then for Gold Diggers of 49, I'm going to say 2.5 and a light recommendation.
I'll throw Quail Hunt a 1, mostly for the ideas I see in it that could be good. And I'll give Gold Diggers, I think, a 2.5. Yeah, I think it'd be more like a solid 3 without the racism. But it has the racism and a particularly egregious scene. So there we go. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next time, we will finish 1935 with our shorts with another Mickey Mouse cartoon. But this time, the whole gang's there.
Yay.
So join us then on ice.
Ah. All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
This has been How's It Hold Up with Danica Juarez and Jan James. You can find our podcast on Twitter at How's It Hold Up Pod. That's with each word capitalized and no apostrophe. Also, if you'd like to support us, we have a Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/user?u=279-0566. Every little bit helps, and even with a minimum pledge, you get access to things you won't hear in our main podcast feed. Check it out for more info. The two pieces of music used in this episode were created by Kevin MacLeod. You can find both The Curtain Rises and Cool Cats at incomptech.com. That's incomptech.com. Both songs were licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. More info on that can be found at http://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0. Thanks for listening!